Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Oh, I laugh because it's true. I laugh because it's true. I am William Clear. This is Pop Talk and Aliens. It is a podcast. She is absolutely right on every count. We're going to talk about alien news in this episode. We're going to talk about things that are going on in the world of aliens and the world of the search for extraterrestrial life. And we're also going to talk about, of course, Space Force, the brand new space program that was introduced by the Trump administration and Mike Pence himself. But first, speaking of Trump, there are some things he said recently that I think cannot be ignored. I am not political on the show at all. I do not get into politics. This show is for entertainment value. It's to escape, tell funny stories, tell interesting stories, talk about Star Wars all the time. But Trump's recent comments must be addressed. And they are comments that took place during a rally in Great Falls, Montana, not long ago. And, well, at this rally, Trump said the following. I'm just going to read it verbatim for you so you can digest it as I have. Quote from Donald Trump. I have broken more Elton John records. Now, first sentence, I don't know if he means that he's broken. I mean, I assume he means he's broken attendance records. But I can imagine that he has broken Elton John records, too. Like, I know that him and Elton John actually used to be very good friends. Elton John opened up a couple of his casinos, you know, with shows. And then when the time came for the campaign to run, Elton John was obviously a Hillary supporter. And I think that made Donald Trump mad. So he probably did break some records. But what he's saying is that he's broken attendance records. So I've broken more Elton John records. He seems to have a lot of records. He most certainly does. And I, by the way, I don't have a musical instrument. I don't have a guitar or an organ. I don't have a guitar or an organ. No organ. Elton has an organ. Let's stop right there. Again, you know, as with the first sentence when he says I've broken a lot of Elton John records, does he mean he's broken records or broken attendance records? When he says Elton John has an organ, we obviously know that Elton John has an organ. But is he speaking of the musical instrument or a body part? Let's go ahead and assume that he's talking again about the musical part of things. Elton John has an organ. Elton John, you know, I don't want to get nitpicky on the president for this. But I'm going to get nitpicky on the president for this. Elton John hasn't played an organ on stage in like 50 fucking years. Okay. I'll get some YouTube comment of some Elton John person will say, oh, no, he did in 1995 during the Made in England tour. He busted on an organ in the Vermont show. Only time. Whatever. The point is, I know that didn't happen, but Elton John used to play an organ when he was in a band called Bluesology before he was even named Elton John. Since then, he plays a fucking piano. That's it. He doesn't even play organ. Like, if there's an organ on an Elton John record, with the exception, with rare exception, he doesn't even play it. So Elton John has an organ, says Donald Trump, and lots of people, other people helping. That's true. He does have lots of other people helping. He has a very good band and, you know, crew members and stuff like that. Trump continues, no, we've broken a lot of records. We've broken virtually every record. Because, you know, look, I only need the space. They need much more room for basketball, for hockey, and all of the sports. They need a lot of room. We don't need it. We have people in that space, so we break all of these records. Really, we do it without, like, the musical instruments. This is the only musical, the mouth, and hopefully the brain attached to the mouth, right? The brain. More important than the mouth is the brain. The brain is much more important. The mouth attached to the brain. Hopefully? Did he say hopefully the mouth is attached to the brain? He said hopefully. Yeah, hopefully the brain attached to the mouth, right? The brain. More important than the mouth is the brain. That's kind of a Yoda way of putting things. All right, so, you know, again, this is not about the President Trump's politics. You can believe whatever you like. You can support whatever you like. As long as you're not a fucking dick, then believe what you want to believe. This is about him talking about my boy Elton John and suggesting, even in the least, that he holds any sort of attendance records over Elton John. Let's just look at a few of the numbers here. Trump, let's see, just to name a few. November 3rd, 2016, more than 15,000 people attended a rally in North Carolina. 2016, 15,000 people in Geneva, Ohio. 12,000 people in Manchester, New Hampshire, November 2016. October 2016, 12,000 people. November 4th, 10,500 people. All right. Let's compare that to some of Elton John's numbers. On October 25th and 26th of 1975, Elton John played two sold-out shows in Dodger Stadium, which has a capacity of 56,000. So he's already beaten those records of Trump's by 10. Now let's imagine that Trump, you know, obviously he's had many more rallies than just those that I've listed. He's had many rallies. Let's say that all of them have 12,000 people or so. Elton John played a show in 1980 at Central Park that had anywhere between 300 and 400,000 people. Yes, he had a lot of help. He had a band, no organ, had a band, had a crew, and minimum 300,000 people in attendance. He's also played Wembley Stadium, God knows how many times, which has a capacity of 82,000. He plays nightly, almost nightly, in his farewell tour to between 17 and 21,000 people every single fucking night. So, I have a real problem with the president when he starts citing my boy. Anyway, that's as far as I'm going to go with the politics. Donald Trump, dead wrong on the issue of breaking Elton John records. Let's move on. More on, excuse me, there it goes, the nodes. Before we get into anything else, I'm going to talk some pop talk stuff, and then we'll get into the alien news. But there's a few updates in the world of popular culture that I would like you to know about. Before I do so, I do want to remind you that Pop Talk and Aliens is brought to you by Audible. Audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens will get you a free 30-day trial of Audible services, as well as a free audiobook for 30 days, no strings attached. Get a free audiobook. You get 30 days to listen to it on your device, on your computer, on your Amazon Echo, or whatever sort of incarnation of one of those things you might have. It's excellent. And I always mention Audible and the fact that they're kind enough to give us a sponsorship. But if you are not familiar with Audible, it is an audiobook service. They have almost 200,000 titles, all in audio form, that you can download, that you can listen to at your leisure while you're in the car, like I said, on all your devices. It's a fantastic service. I recommend you trying it out, and you can do so for free by going to audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. So check it out. Get 30 days on the house. Tell them I sent you. You're already telling them I sent you just by going to that link, audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. Now, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about before we get into the aliens. The first is, this may just be enjoyable to me and me alone, but there's a new thing that I've noticed is happening on YouTube. My son hipped me to it. And it's a thing where guys who only like hip-hop or are hip-hop artists or hip-hop artists that only like hip-hop are doing these videos where they listen to Pink Floyd, and in real time, they react to Pink Floyd. There's a bunch of them. It's rampant. I could not believe it. My son was showing me that there's tons of these. And it's Pink Floyd. I mean, they do other ones, but like Pink Floyd is like the main one. And I'm going to give you a recommendation. There's a YouTube channel called Joey Reacts. And Joey is a hip-hop dude that started listening to Pink Floyd on a YouTube channel where everybody can just watch him listen to the song, which is, you know, that's what YouTube is, right? People opening shit, people reacting to stuff. He listens to Pink Floyd songs and they blow his fucking mind and he loves it. And it's just, I can't tell you. I usually do not, get into that kind of thing, that kind of modern YouTube voyeurism where you're just watching someone do something that you could be doing at the same time instead of watching them. But this is entertaining, and there's tons of them. Joey Reacts if you just want a few minutes to just laugh and enjoy someone, it makes me feel good watching someone enjoy Pink Floyd this much, especially who has no familiarity with them at all. Watch him listening to Great Gig in the Sky. You see this guy go nuts. It's amazing. It's awesome. So there's that. What else have we got? Stranger Things 3. Stranger Things 3 has been delayed until next summer. I guess because all the kids can't stop doing other stuff or whatever. I don't know what the reasons are. I assume that's what it is. Finn Wolfhard's band is playing everywhere. They're playing the Fillmore. I listen to one of their songs. It's called City Boy. It's fucking great. It's a good song. The girl in that band, great guitar player. So they got all that going on. So Stranger Things 3 is going to be delayed a year from now. Which for me, personally, I don't like because I kind of don't even want them to make a Stranger Things 3. Like, I'm cool with it. I'll enjoy it. I'll gobble it up. I'm sure I'll like it. I love season 2. But the further they get into the decade of the 80s, the more I remember what that was like. And it starts to lose its wonder. You know, that early 80s feel of a John Carpenter movie, of an E.T. type thing, was very wonderful. So this one's going to be in the summer of 85. There's a big mall involved, things like that. So now you know that. Some quick Star Wars news. And believe me, there is not going to be a lot of Star Wars talk on this show until Episode 9 comes out. And if Episode 9 tanks, we're not even going to bother. Not even going to bother talking about it. But I will tell you that there's this new Star Wars cartoon called Resistance coming out in October. And it looks sort of anime. It's not like the kind of animation they did for Clone Wars and Rebels, which are very popular. This one takes place after after Return of the Jedi or prior to The Force Awakens or something. It doesn't look all that good, but the YouTube trailer for it, at last count, had like 1,400 likes and 24,000 dislikes. So when Charlie Crabtree and I on our last episode talked about Star Wars being dead, that's Taps. They play that when something's dead. Star Wars being among them. All right, one last thing, and then we'll get into the aliens. There's this movie that I just watched. I think it was on Netflix or Amazon, called Chernobyl. It's made by the guy who did Paranormal Activity and Area 51. Now, I've talked about Area 51 on this podcast before. I did a whole review of it on one of the episodes. I cannot recommend it any higher than I already have. If you like aliens and stuff, like if you enjoy this podcast, if you enjoy Coast to Coast with the late great Art Bell or with George Norrie or Ancient Aliens or anything like that, you have to watch the movie Area 51. It's one of those found footage movies. It's directed by a guy named Oren Peli. Again, he did Paranormal Activity, and he did a new movie called Chernobyl, which is, it's in the exact same style. It's, you know, a bunch of teenagers getting themselves in over their heads, and then some supernatural shit happens, and, you know, it all goes south from there. Chernobyl, like, Area 51 is a perfect premise. The way he does it is set up perfectly because he uses all of the real mythology, all of the real American mythology about Area 51. The black mailbox, Rachel Nevada, the little alien, the camo dudes that chase you around. You know, what S4 versus Area 51. S4 obviously being where the aliens are. Area 51 being where they make the bombers and all that stuff. And it's wonderful. It's a fantastically entertaining movie. The ending is stupid, but whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not like you're not invested in the story in the way you would be another movie. It's just like popcorn entertainment. And so his other movie that it's just, I think Netflix again or Amazon, is called Chernobyl. And it's the same thing. And I think they really filmed it at Chernobyl. I couldn't find out. There's not a lot of like documentation on it because it's, you know, real low budget movies. He gets the money for his movies from dentists. That's not true. It's not true at all. I just made that up. He's funded by studios, not dentists. I said that before about him and the dentist. The reason I say that is it's a private joke. I'll make it public. This is a true story. The Coen brothers used to make trailers for movies that they wanted to get funded, and then they would take them to like dentists and lawyers to pay for them. That was like, you know, old-fashioned Kickstarter. So I always like to think that this guy got his money from dentists, because they just seem like the kind of movies that you would have to self-fund. But anyway, whatever. It's not even funny to you. It's only funny to me. Chernobyl is worth checking out if you like that stupid kind of shit where teenagers continually make the wrong choice and continually get themselves into situations, and it's like, you know, camera phones and stuff like that. And I don't know. I like this guy. He's like I think he's from Israel. I like his movies. I like the way he puts the shit together. So that's my movie recommendation of the week, Chernobyl. All right, let's get into space stuff. Let's get into aliens. Let's talk about that, because that's what you're here for. You don't want to hear me talking about guys making movies from dentists, because that's not even what happened. All right, let's start off with SETI. Let's fuck with SETI. I've talked about SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, many times on the show. They listen for sound waves. They listen for noises from space that could possibly be extraterrestrial in nature, and that's really all they do. The main thing that they do is publicly disavow anyone else's fucking way of looking for UFOs and space aliens and broadcasting transmissions. But I've talked about that before, right? The radio signals and how the Hindenburg transmission is the one that's furthest out into space. But I haven't talked much about, or at all, about the television signals that go out, because the television signals that we broadcast also travel into space. And however much time passes at the speed of light is where the television signal now is. So let's say this. If you were, let's say the first episode of Star Trek was 1967. All right, so if you are an alien 50 light years away from Earth right now, you get to watch Star Trek fucking brand new episodes of Star Trek. Like if I went into a light speed machine and I was like instantly transported to 50 years from Earth, I could watch Star Trek and it would be brand new to me. Actually, it would not be brand new to me at all. I would have seen them already, but I get to watch them like, you know, I would get to watch Star Trek episodes like they're aliens are getting to watch. Aliens are getting to watch brand new episodes of Star Trek if they're 50 light years away. But there are tens of thousands of stars within 100 light years of Earth. So Star Trek might be burning up the universe with popularity right now. And these aliens just aren't close enough to like let us know how much they love Star Trek. The point being, there are many, many ways of us communicating with extraterrestrials via signals from Earth or signals back from them that SETI and their fucking radio satellites are not the only thing. And there was a recent article written on Medium that kind of trashes SETI, so I was very happy about it, that says, we're looking for aliens in all the wrong ways. SETI is searching for the same signals humans were producing in the 1960s. Why wouldn't aliens do better? And the article goes on to say, this question, of course, is extraordinarily speculative, but gives us a chance to look at our own technological progress and to consider how that might play out elsewhere in the universe. After all, if someone from a culture that was only versed in smoke signals and drum beats found themselves deep inside the heart of a forest, they might conclude that there was no intelligent life around. Yet, if you gave them a cell phone, there's a good chance they could get reception from right where they stood. Our conclusions may be as biased as the methods we apply. But not only Star Trek burning up the universe. Think about this. Okay, if you were at the Alpha Centauri star, which is roughly five light years from Earth, you would just now be enjoying Janet Jackson running around naked at the Super Bowl. Remember? And Justin Timberlake ripped all of her clothes off and she was naked for, or whatever happened. I don't know. There was a nipple or something. I fucking hate football. 10 years out, you get to watch Family Guy. You know, you get 15 years out, you're watching The Sopranos and Friends. Few years out, you know, if you get far enough away, you can see new episodes of Night Court. I don't know why I keep saying new episodes. They're not new episodes. They're new episodes to them. To us, they're not making new Night Courts in space. So anyway, that's kind of the whole SETI thing, right? You know, they expect aliens to be listening to our radio shows and watching Star Trek and, you know, then again, beaming it back to us, telling us that they enjoyed it. I don't know if you've seen the movie Contact. I highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite science fiction movies. It's one of my favorite movies. It's also based on a book by Carl Sagan, which is also fantastic. That movie, if SETI was like that movie, it would be great. You know, just this passionate search for life, and Jodie Foster, you know, just like sitting and listening to washing machines, trying to figure out patterns and all this stuff. But it's nothing like that. And, you know, there's a scene in that movie when after Jodie Foster discovers the alien signal, where everybody descends upon the SETI lab because, you know, everyone's freaked out and it made the news and everything. And James Woods comes in, and James Woods is like the head of the NSA or something like that. He's in a position of authority, and he acts as the foil to Jodie Foster. That character should have been Seth Shostak. But actually, Seth Shostak would not. Actually, you know what? Again, if you've seen that movie, if Seth Shostak were a character in that movie, he would be the Tom Skerritt character. Because the Tom Skerritt character is always stealing the credit from Jodie Foster for finding the signal. Even though she found it, he's always worming his way in to make it seem like it's something that he actually did. So yeah, he would be the Seth Shostak of that particular story. But just to wrap up on Seth, I'm going to play you it's a couple minutes, a clip of Stanton Friedman, who I've talked about many times, is the godfather of Roswell, if you will. He is, he kind of broke the story, and he's written a million books, and he is absolutely convinced, he is totally in the bag, that UFOs are real, aliens have visited the Earth, continue to visit the Earth, and so on and so forth. I mean, he's pot committed to this, right? And he's actually debating or having a conversation with Seth Shostak, and his like intro to the conversation is what I want to play for you, because it's indicative of how ufologists feel about SETI, and certainly, you know, how I feel about SETI to an extent. I'm not as fervent in my views about, in my being convinced that UFOs have landed and flying saucers are real, and, you know, Roswell, every single thing is true about it. I don't know for sure, but Stanton Friedman in his mind does. And so here's his take on SETI, and, you know, give it to the man, Stan the man. He gives it to Seth Shostak right in his face. Here's what he had to say. Audio quality is not perfect, so this won't be too long a clip, but I think we can make it work. Here you go.
We're dealing with the biggest story of the millennium, that is, visits to planet Earth, successful cover-up of the best data, bodies, and wreckage for 57 years. Now, when it comes to ufology versus, I was going to say SETIology, but I don't think there is such a word. I think that there are a lot of good scientists with a strong interest in SETI. Unfortunately, I believe that the SETI program is based on a number of assumptions having no basis in fact, and assuming, for example, that there's nobody coming here, that radio is the ultimate means of communication, that if aliens were coming here, they would know about it, that there is no colonization, no migration, that we need to talk about great distances before there's anybody out there, and that we can't possibly be a threat to anybody out there. They also assume that there's no national security aspect to the notion of alien visitations, despite the fact that obviously every military group in the world would love to get their hands on something with the capabilities of flying saucers. So there's a clear and definite difference. They ignore the UFO data. We ufologists look at the SETI data and we say, hey, where's your evidence? They want us to provide a body. We want them to provide any kind of evidence that there's anybody out there sending signals.
I am not an investigator of UFOlogy, as you call it. That's not my bag. I'm an astronomer. And we're doing an experiment to try and prove that we have some cosmic company, if you will. I would say right off, we have not found that evidence. And I think that's an important difference between me and Stanton. Because while he's claiming that he has found the evidence and they're here, which, as he has said, would be an incredibly important discovery, I don't find that evidence terribly compelling, and I'm eager to hear exactly how compelling it is. We don't make that claim, but if we do find something, I don't think that it's going to be like these claims of the ufologists that were being visited. I think it's going to be a claim that can be verified by many, many people in many different ways, and that there will be no doubt that that we have found something interesting.
All right, so I think we can move on from that. And I wanted to talk about something that I've talked about before, but I haven't elaborated much on it. And that is the modern idea, the idea of today that aliens have been proven not to exist because everyone has cameras. And, you know, we don't see any UFOs now when during the time that not everyone had a camera or, you know, at least didn't have one right in their pocket. That's when we got all the photos of the UFOs. And true. However, I've said this before, but we do have shots of UFOs from people's phone cameras. Plenty. Go to YouTube. Search it. They're everywhere. But people will chalk them up to Photoshop, to After Effects, or whatever. And I'm sure in many, many cases they are exactly that. But there are some that are simply undeniable. Primarily the 2004 UFO near San Diego that the Pentagon itself has released the video of. And I'll talk about it a little bit later when we get into the government's new project. But yet, outside of, you know, that one, which is even conveniently ignored, there was, they talked about it a bit when it happened, and they've talked about it when the video happened, I believe, in 2004. It wasn't released until recently. And it was on the news and everything, and everyone just blew it off, even though the head of the defense program came out and said, no, this isn't anything we can identify. You know, it still basically got buried. So that's the attitude is, oh, we don't have any videos. And then if they see a video, it's, well, we don't, you know, believe it. We don't believe that. They're denied. It's, you know, they're passed off as balloons. It's always balloons. Still, what the fuck? What with the balloons? Why is that always the go-to? Balloons. How many balloons are floating around in the sky 24 hours a day? I can't even remember the last time I saw a balloon. Like floating. Let alone a gigantic balloon that could possibly be mistaken for a UFO. The fucking balloons. Here's a good example of alien stories that get buried, get made fun of, and ultimately discredited. And maybe in this case, that's the truth. And in maybe all cases, that's the truth. Certainly in many, many, many of the cases, that is definitely true. It's definitely fake. But here's a good one. Are you aware of the fact that the aliens watched the World Cup in person? Yeah, they got caught red-handed watching, gray-handed. Watching the World Cup, which makes sense because, you know, if you're going to watch sports on Earth, you should probably watch the one that is the most popular on the planet. And I'm sorry to say, Mr. NFL, you are not the most popular sport on the planet because do you know how many people watched Super Bowl last year? 103 million. Now, granted, that is a fuck of a lot of people. That is one third of the sentient human beings in America. However, how many people watched the last game of the World Cup? 1 billion. 3 times the entire population of the sentient beings in America. World Cup overall, 3.2 billion viewers. So from the point of view of the aliens is all I'm saying. They're probably more interested in like what the whole world watches instead of just, you know, Tom Brady. Which is not to say that aliens are not interested in America. Good old US of A, we hear a lot that UFOs are more common in other countries, and I do not believe that's true. I think the reason we think that is because governments outside of the U.S. freely open with their information about UFOs. I mean, except in the case of the San Diego UFO that I was just talking about, which is possibly the most compelling UFO video ever, that took place in the United States. But other than that, outside in other countries, they don't hide it. They don't keep people quiet about it. So if you're in England, you know, they actually have a government website devoted to UFOs in England, a current website about it. So you get info. It's readily available. So it lends itself to the fact that, oh, in other countries there's more UFOs. Well, I think there's just more information on them. They're not all fucking weird about it like we are. But, you know, don't worry, my red, white, and blue friends. They come here plenty. The only reason I can think of from a UFO perspective that they wouldn't come here is because, you know, they crash and we fucking capture them and we put them in secret bases and shit. I'll talk more about the secret bases that we put those things in later and you'll understand. I wouldn't, you know, want to come here anyway, but they do. They do. But the point being, there's disclosure outside this country, so you're going to get more info. They don't hate us, you know, the aliens, they don't hate us. It's not personal. It's not personal. So don't worry. So back to the World Cup and the photographs and the evidence. So there was numerous pictures of this. It's very hard to describe, but it's a gigantic white, like jellyfish looking thing that they spotted in the Russian skies during the World Cup. It's kind of like a blimp that like expands around a center, gets bigger and bigger as it moves through the sky. It's crazy. And caught on camera. Many, many cameras. And not the first time one of these things has been seen. One of these things was seen in China several years ago, I think 2010 or so. And, excuse me, they had to shut down the entire airport. Very similar to the Russian one, and they passed it off as a hoax. Even though dozens of cameras had video from different angles of this thing. Now, I've always said that the greatest way to hoax a UFO would be to coordinate a bunch of people faking different angles, but this is like way beyond that. This is way beyond that kind of thing. This is legitimate angles of this crazy UFO above China all over the place, and it shut down the airport. I saw a UFO myself once, and I say that again, you know, literally, unidentified flying object. I was in Gold Country where it's very dark, and I was driving, and then this huge white balloonish thing, but way bigger. It wasn't a fucking balloon. With this center in it that looked like some sort of ship was propelling this white fog balloony thing around it. Straight up into the sky, bright as fuck. People were pulling over. I didn't even get my camera out, which is another thing that people always say, like, why didn't you take a picture? I was so, like, in shock and enamored by this thing that it did not occur to me to take my camera out. I just watched it until it was gone. I didn't want to take my eyes off it. Now, the next day, the military came out and said that it was planned, and it was just a missile test. Or a rocket test, something like that. And LAX was shut down because of this. And they said, we told them in advance that they were going to have to be shut down. And I'm just wondering, like, why was that not why was there no announcement made of that prior to the launching of a rocket? I mean, it was in Southern California, and I could see it all the way from the Sacramento area. It was ridiculous. And then later, someone said that it was a SpaceX project. It was one of Elon Musk's things. So, it's a weird case, and it brings back this Chinese thing and this Russian thing where I think the Russians eventually said that they were testing a rocket, and China just said it was a hoax, and then we said it was a rocket, or it was SpaceX, and they all looked the same. So maybe they were all rockets, or maybe they were all ships. It's hard to know. Because it's not open and shut. Usually never is with these things, right? That's the whole point. The whole point of why we talk about this stuff. Now, one other thing that people say is that the aliens are not the bee's knees anymore of interest, you know? But, au contraire, they are making a huge comeback. In the 80s and the 90s, aliens were huge. You know, there were the History Channel stuff, there was TV specials about it, cheap movies of the week were made, Fire in the Sky with Robert Patrick and Jimmy fucking Garner. All kinds of stuff was made. It was a big deal. The abductions were really popular, and then it just faded away. But now, look on Netflix. You got Captured, you got Unacknowledged, you got Unsealed Alien Files. You go to Amazon, there's a million things about aliens on there, but then Amazon will let anything on. They let a movie that I made go on there, so their standards are a little bit different, but nevertheless, it's definitely a topic of popularity. And I had a conversation with somebody recently where the great Eric Klotz, one of my best friends and since the 70s, but he was saying, you know, back in the day, we used to go to the grocery store and there'd be those cheap newspaper type magazines and they'd always have a gray on the cover. And, you know, it'd be like an impulse buy. It'd be like a selling point. It's like, you know, the clickbait of the 1980s. And I'm pretty sure they don't make those anymore. I don't really go into the grocery store aisle. I use the self-checkout because I can't really deal with people. But from my last memories of being in aisles, they don't make those cheap-ass newspapers anymore. They still make a few, like, rag magazines. Like, I did see a magazine that said Burt Reynolds on the verge of death, but I'm pretty sure that that particular issue came out in like 2012 and they just leave it there until he dies. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think if you bought that magazine, you'd find out that it was actually 6 years old and he's just been on the brink of death this whole time. I don't think they're actually printing new stories about Burt Reynolds. There's also another one that has a picture of Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani on like a farm or something. And it says At Home with Blake and Gwen. I'm pretty sure that one is like 10 years old also. And they just leave it there until they get divorced. If they're not already, I don't know. I'll follow those two. But the point I'm making is that although we don't have the rag newspapers with a picture of a gray all the time and talk of abductions, like I said, you know, Netflix is being permeated by alien stuff. And if you go look, like, I'm always Googling science news and stuff like that, and a lot of it about UFOs, but there is clickbait with pictures of gray aliens and stuff and cheesy UFO headlines constantly. It's ubiquitous, to use a word that I hate and always use. Ubiquitous clickbait articles about aliens and UFOs and UFO landings, and, you know, the only thing that really isn't a thing anymore is the abductions. That's kind of gone the way of extinction. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Bud Hopkins, who was this doctor, he was a champion of the abductees, and he interviewed all of them and he did all the regressive hypnosis to make them remember what it was like when they were abducted. He passed away, and kind of with him died the abduction stuff. Although people are always still reporting that they got abducted, it's just not, it's not something in the media. It's old news. It's never been proven. There's never been any real credence to it. It's the same story every single time. How many more times can you hear about, you know, the cold metal interior of the spaceship and the medical tools and the big black eyes staring at you but knowing what you were thinking and communicating to you that everything was going to be all right but that you were going to have their alien hybrid baby? You know, the best bit about that ever is Saturday Night Live. There's a sketch, you've probably seen it, with Kate McKinnon, where she's with, I think, Ryan Reynolds, and Melissa McCarthy, I think, is in it. And she's talking about being sexually assaulted and on this a spaceship while she's being abducted by gray aliens. And it is like, it's tear-inducingly funny. It is one of my top five Saturday Night Live sketches of all time. So I would definitely recommend you go look at Kate McKinnon Aliens. But anyway, the abductions are over, but the clickbait exists. And actually, one of the big offenders, once again, Seth Shostak. Yep. An article published by SETI just recently. Let me grab it here. This was less than a month ago, July 24th, 2018. The headline, Could We Be Alone in the Cosmos? And the accompanying picture is a gigantic picture of a gray with a circle and a line through it. You know, like a no grays sign. And then the article is just some scientific stuff that Seth Shostak wrote about how big the universe is. But the article itself is not even as, like, it's not long enough to fill as much space as this picture almost. This picture takes up the entire top of fold, as we say in the marketing business, of the page. So if you go to the article, you see nothing but a gray with a circle and a line through it. And then, you know, more of Seth Shostak's shit. But he's already been dressed down enough by Stanton Friedman. So I'm going to just, you know, I'll enough about that guy. There is one other clickbaity article that this is indicative of everything, right? These are everywhere. And this, again, less than a month old. This is new stuff, new alien news. And this headline is from The Independent. Aliens might have lived on the moon, scientists say. I didn't actually read the article at all because I'm not interested in aliens and the moon. Unless I'm presented with something from more than The Independent. But the best part of this article that I did read was the first comment, which was left by someone who may or may not have been Charlie Crabtree. He has certainly not admitted to me that it was, but the commenter, and this is comment number one on the headline, Aliens Might Have Lived on the Moon, Scientists Say. Comment number one. comes from a user called Charlie Charlie, and his comment is, this headline is a disgrace. So thank you, Charlie Charlie, whoever you may be. If you are Charlie Crabtree, then this dovetails perfectly into our next subject, and something that I am very, very excited to talk about. Let me set it up this way for you. A few years back, during one of the episodes of this podcast, Charlie Crabtree asked me what he had no idea at the time would be the question of a lifetime. And that was, he asked me if, we were talking about Star Wars, of course, and he asked me if I would still like The Force Awakens if it was just a movie called Teen Space Force 5000. Now, who knew at the time that he was literally naming the next and probably most important military branch ever to be created. That is right. The newest form of military has been announced, and as I'm sure you've heard about this, it is called, indeed, Teen Space Force 5000. It's amazing that you would, it's actually only called Space Force, but it's called Space Force. And, you know, it makes sense. We had the Armed Forces, we have the Navy, we have the Air Force, and now we have the Teen Space Force 5000, the Space Force, which makes sense because it's not like the Air Force is called Toddler Air Force 4000. So anyway, it's just the next step from the Air Force, but it's a logical one, and it's a good idea. Now, the way it was presented doesn't make it sound very good. And also the fact that it comes from the Trump administration is obviously going to, or has made it mocked immediately without any examination. But here's how Mike Pence put it. Here's what, no relation to Hunter Pence and no relation to the English coin, had to say about it. Actually, hold on. Sorry. I just wanted to make those dumb Pence jokes, but we will get back to Mike Pence and his official announcement, and I'll play it for you. But first, let's go back a little bit further before they actually announced it, when Donald Trump himself was dreaming of a Space Force at a press conference in June of 2018. I'm going to quote from this article, which was from the paper was this from? Independent? I don't know. So it was from some English paper. Who cares? It was a good source, though. It wasn't some bullshit paper. This is a real article. Anyway, it says, and I quote, President Donald Trump directed the Department of Defense and the Pentagon to establish a Space Force as the sixth branch of the armed forces in a meeting with the National Space Council today. Quote, "We are going to have the Air Force and we are going to have the Space Force, separate but equal." Really, I can't believe you used that fucking phrase, separate but equal. Oh my God, dude. Buddy, come, oh God. Okay, so, quote, let me just go back to the quote again, separate but equal. We are going to have the Air Force and we're going to have the Space Force, separate but equal. It's going to be something so important, President Trump said. Now back to the article. The announcement came as a surprise in a meeting where the newly revived National Space Council was set to unveil the first comprehensive policy on space traffic management. Space traffic management? There's so much shit going on in space, they need stoplights and stuff? I'm probably so annoying to someone who actually understands this stuff. I'm sure there's great reason for space traffic management, okay? But I just, for whatever, it reminds me of, like, if they had stop signs in space and stuff, because space shuttles whizzing by, cutting each other off, flipping each other off and stuff. But anyway, I'm sorry, back to the article. The whole point of today's meeting was not about this space force at all. It was about the space traffic management policy, said Brian Whedon, Director of Program Planning for the Secure World Foundation, an organization that focuses on space policy and apparently space traffic. Still, this isn't the first time we've heard about Trump's hopes for a space force. He proposed the idea of a space force in March 2018, contradicting Defense Secretary Jim Mattis' opposition to creating a new military service. In a letter to the Committee on Armed Services, Mattis argued that it would just create more overhead and more bureaucracy. As it stands, the Air Force is largely in charge of controlling national security in space under the umbrella of the Air Force Space Command. So it's almost called Space Force anyway, the way it currently operates, which is under the Air Force. Back to the article. Its responsibilities include supervising launches and controlling DoD satellites, including ones involved in missile early warnings, communication, and navigation. There's a lot of complexity in making this change since it involves creating a whole new Pentagon bureaucracy from scratch, Whedon says. Everything as mundane as new uniforms. Oh my God, new uniforms, that's not mundane. Are you kidding me? New Space Force uniforms? I didn't even think of that. Those would be awesome. Like Death Troopers, like all black. You know they're going to be all black with Trump. Has some weird fucking logo on it. Those are going to be awesome. Anyway, getting back to what Whedon said, everything is mundane as new uniforms, all the way through to the new doctrine, and probably tens of thousands of new people. It would really be a big change, and that's not something to be taken lightly. Now, of course it's not. Space Force is a big deal, right? I mean, aside from what they say it's for, which is, you know, missile detection and ruling the skies, the wild space above us because Chinese satellites and stuff like that. We know that we have got aliens flying in here that can use lightning bolts to cut you up like a fish. We know that they've crashed here. They mutilate cows, fuck up crop circles. They kidnapped poor Betty Hill and she had to punch one of them. You know what they did to Stan Romanek, remember, from Captured? They hung out in his backyard all the time. They came in and they'd call him on the phone, and then when he's on the phone, they'd knock him out and he'd fall onto his kitchen floor. They're a menace. Plus, I mean, yes, there's Chinese satellites that probably need to be blown out of the sky. There's Russian satellites that should probably be blown out of the sky. Although we probably will just fix those and make them better instead of blowing them up. And this will be the service of Space Force. And the uniforms will be fucking awesome. I guarantee you that if nothing else, Space Force will not skimp on the uniforms. But there are issues. There is actually a treaty that was written in the 60s that every country is promised that they'll be nice to each other in space. So, you know, if an astronaut like floats off of the International Space Station, another country is obligated to help him out and not just let him float away. So, you know, there's this treaty issue to get around. But I think that with this particular administration's attitudes towards treaties, that's probably not going to be a problem. So I think we can look forward to Death Stars and ventral cannons and fuckload of Star Destroyers, you know, right in our orbit as soon as this gets started. And you know what? Good. Good. It's about time. And here's another good reason why. So we talked, you know, I just told you about the mutilated cows, and we know all that stuff, right? The abductions, aliens constantly coming down here and doing whatever they want. Here's another good specific reason, an example of how Space Force could possibly really, really do us some good. Now, I don't know if Donald Trump knows this story. Probably not. Most people don't. But it's definitely something Space Force could have prevented if it had existed at the time. Let's go back to the 1970s. And, of course, the human battle against aliens in the underground base in New Mexico. Granted, very far-fetched story. However, as the story goes, and I have a full podcast on this one if you want more details, but the short version is, according to some, and I mean a very small some, there is a base underneath the ground in Dulce, New Mexico, that has 7 levels of captured aliens. 7. And as you may imagine, with each descending level, the aliens get worse and worse. The quality of the aliens' personalities decreasing with every descending level. And when you get to level 7, all the way down, you are dealing with the garbage. Alien garbage. The most fucked up, sick-ass aliens from around the galaxy. Evil. Evil pricks. And violent. Violent, too. According to a guy named Philip Schneider, who was an engineer at that shithole in the 70s, he encountered an escaped 7th level gray alien. So, you know, from all the way down. And once he encountered this thing, I believe he pulled a pistol, if I remember right. I'd have to go check the original podcast, but I'm pretty sure this story's made up, so I don't think it matters. But pretty sure Philip Schneider pulled a pistol and, you know, got a couple of bullets into the alien. I do know for sure, though, that the alien sent some sort of electrical charge of energy into Philip Schneider and cut him apart like a fish. His words. He got cut apart like a fish. But luckily, and randomly, a Green Beret just happened to be hanging out in that area, and he came along and he saved Schneider, sacrificing his own life in the process because the alien killed the fucking Green Beret who killed the alien. It was like a mutual death. It was like when you're playing Call of Duty and you're both shooting each other at the same time and you both die. That's what happened. Green Beret killed the alien. Alien killed the Green Beret. And there's Philip Schneider sitting there like a fish, all cut apart. And he would go on for years. He did lectures and stuff, Philip Schneider, and he would show people all of his gross wounds and stuff. And ultimately, you know, depressingly, he took his own life. Now, what the fuck does that little side tour have to do with Space Force? Everything. Because poor Phil Schneider and that random Green Beret would be alive today because Space Force would have seen that fucking 7-foot gray alien with his lightning bolts coming from 10,000 miles away and would have blown him up, wearing awesome uniforms at the time, too. By the way, as a side note, I just would like you to know that I don't think my jokes are funny. Just if you're wondering, like when I was earlier, I was saying like, Mike Pence isn't related to a coin, and, you know, do I think that kind of low-hanging comedy is funny? No. But yes, obviously. I mean, I realize why it's not funny, but I also realize why it is funny. So, I mean, things that I think are really funny are things that you probably don't think are funny, like the guy making money from dentists to make his movies. And never mind. Whatever. Let's listen now to Mike Pence. No relation. Let's just listen to Mike Pence make his proud announcement about Space Force.
Now the time has come to write the next great chapter in the history of our armed forces, to prepare for the next battlefield, where America's best and bravest will be called to deter and defeat a new generation of threats to our people, to our nation. The time has come to establish the United States Space Force. The men and women of this department have also taken historic steps to secure American leadership in space. At the direction of Secretary Mattis, the Department of Defense is fielding a new generation of jam-resistant GPS and communication satellites, and new missile warning satellites that are smaller, tougher, and more maneuverable than ever before. And while these steps have been vital to our national defense, they're really only a beginning. They're only a beginning of meeting the rising security threats our nation faces in space today and in the future. As President Trump has said in his words, it is not enough to merely have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. And so we will.
So the way I interpret that, and it could just be me, he's clearly saying that we already keep an eye on satellites and ICBMs and shit like that, with the with the Air Force's contributions to their current version of Space Force. But now with Space Force, we'll be able to do it better. But I mean, do you need an entire Space Force just for that, just to make it better? I'm telling you, more to this. And I mean, I don't want to sound like Alex Jones, you know, without the screaming and the crying and shit. But like the old Alex Jones of like 15 years ago when he touted conspiracy theories that were fun, like Space Force versus the aliens would have been right up his alley back then. But we do have proof, and it's not as easy to hide anymore. There's an article that was written less than a year ago. This is from the New York Times. Just relax. It's about UFOs, all right? It's not fucking political. And it's called Glowing Auras and Black Money, the Pentagon's Mysterious UFO Program. And it says, in the $600 billion annual Defense Department budgets, the $22 million spent on the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program was almost impossible to find, which was how the Pentagon wanted it. For years, the program investigated reports of unidentified flying objects. According to Defense Department officials, interviews with program participants and records obtained by the New York Times. It was run by a military intelligence official, Luis Elizondo, on the fifth floor of the Pentagon C-ring deep within the building's maze. Now, we played Mr. Elizondo on the last episode that we did about the Grays, so I'm not going to go all the way into that again. But the point is, that program existed. These programs continue to exist and evolve. We had Project Blue Book, which was the official investigation of UFOs, right? That was around like in the 60s. And eventually they just cut it off and they said, we're not investigating UFOs anymore. We're not finding anything. It's a balloon or it's this and that. And in a very shortly, right after this, I'm going to get into an actual CIA document about what you should do when investigating a UFO and the questionnaire that you should present to people if you're asking them about UFOs, and it's going to be great. So we'll get into that in just a second. But this force that this organization that existed that was watching this fucking crazy UFO do all this stuff, and the guy said that it was, you know, he basically said it was an extraterrestrial craft. It goes to show that we have never stopped. We've never stopped investigating this stuff. There's no point at which the government just decided, just whatever, I forget it, seriously. They're all balloons. They know they're not all balloons. This dude certainly knows that whatever he was looking at is not a balloon. And you can see it online. I don't know what to search. UFO chase, Pentagon UFO 2015 or something. But if you look up Department of Defense UFO footage, look up that, you'll find it. And now Space Force. I, you know, again, on this show, I don't like to sit here and tell you that something is a conspiracy or that it is real or that it is not real because I don't know for sure. I'm not in on the meetings with Mike Pence. I don't get to go into the warehouses where they, you know, store all the Roswell files and stuff. And by the way, I've said this before and I'll say it again. If Roswell actually was an alien crash, there is no fucking evidence of that. That I know for sure. It's gone. It's burnt away. There's nothing left. Whoever knows all that probably died with that knowledge. And maybe it was passed on like in a tribal fashion to someone else. But I think that the knowledge of Roswell lives inside a couple of different brains of people. And there's no physical evidence whatsoever. But anyway, I'm not down in that stuff. So I don't know for sure, but I like to connect dots, and sometimes the dots seem to connect more than other times. And when you look at this, you see that crazy UFO flying around. You hear every president talking about UFOs on Jimmy Kimmel, which I've played before. You know, you hear, you know, Obama's all like joking about it. Hillary's like, oh, I'm an investigator. Bill Clinton's like super weird about it. And George Bush is just like fucking mums the word. He's just like, I'm not getting into that with you. And Jimmy Kimmel really presses him. And he's like, yeah, no, I'm not talking about that. And Jimmy Kimmel says, are there things that presidents know that just simply nobody else knows? And he goes, yes. So having said all that, Mike Pence, the fact that it's Mike Pence that's like really kind of driving this right now, to me, you can, you know, throw it as a little bit of garnish into the conspiracy theory mix, because Mike Pence is a guy who is, you know, way deeper into the actual political spectrum than Trump. I mean, Trump can run around and say that the Space Force and the Air Force are going to be separate but equal. And now it's going to be really important, and it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be all that stuff that he always says. But Mike Pence, to me, seems like the kind of guy who actually knows a couple of things. Like, they're not going to tell Trump that there's UFOs or whatever. I cannot imagine Donald Trump getting, like, the secret briefing. I don't even think if presidents do get that secret briefing, you know, Bill Clinton claimed that he tried to find out if there were aliens, but he could never get a straight answer. George Bush, the way he handled it, I really think that, you know, with his pedigree of, you know, George H.W. Bush and then Prescott Bush going all the way down the line of, you know, since the fucking inception of this country, basically, he probably knows. But Mike Pence seems like the kind of guy who, you know, again, he's like entrenched into the politics and he might, you know a little something that's going on. And so he's pushing for a Space Force. Because you never know. Maybe they do know. I mean, if that thing that was flying around, that crazy thing with all the insane maneuvers that this dude was talking about, I want Space Force to shoot that down. I don't know about you, but I don't trust that thing. I want that thing shot down. I love aliens. I would love to see them come down. But listen, you know, if you're going to be flying around the orbit of the Earth doing all this crazy, you know, tilt-a-whirl stuff and showing off and everything, then you know what? If we got a Space Force, just shoot that thing down. Shoot it down, we'll pick up the pieces and we'll figure it out later. And we'll have killer uniforms, because you know those uniforms are going to be fucking awesome. Anyway, that's Space Force. Let's keep talking government UFO stuff. Let's get into what I was just talking about, which is, this is an actual CIA document that I found. There is so much fun UFO stuff on the CIA website. Nobody ever really bothers to look except UFO investigators that have nothing but time to do this. And, you know, you rarely find anything. Usually you'll find pages where almost every other sentence is redacted, you know, and has the black line over it. Or it'll say bogus. Literally, they'll use that word. They'll literally just write bogus in huge lettering over the entire document. Like, there'll be some document that said aliens landed and crashed and went to Stan Romanek's house and hung out in his backyard and knocked him out in his kitchen, and then it'll just say bogus diagonally across the page. But this document, ladies and gentlemen, is not bogus. It's not marked by the CIA as bogus, and it comes from the official CIA.gov website. And this is some tips for you from the CIA itself on how to handle a UFO investigation. 10 tips when investigating a flying saucer. 1. Establish a group to investigate and evaluate sightings. Before December 1947, there was no specific organization tasked with the responsibility for investigating and evaluating UFO sightings. You know why that was true? Is because in July 47 is when the fucking Roswell UFO crashed, so obviously they didn't have any process back then. And in December 1947, so just a few months later, all of a sudden they have a process. So, I don't know, maybe that suggests that it was actually a UFO that crashed in Roswell, and they decided that they needed a process, 10-step process, of course, to investigate future sightings. So, there were no standards, going back to the document, there were no standards on how to evaluate reports coming in, nor were there any measurable data points or results from controlled experiments for comparison against reported sightings. Because, again, they hadn't done anything, because they didn't expect this shit at all. To end the confusion, head of Air Force Technical Service Command, General Nathan Twining, established Project SIGN, initially named Project Saucer, in 1948 to collect, collate, evaluate, and distribute within the government all information related to such sightings on the premise that UFOs might be real, although not necessarily extraterrestrial, and of the national security concern. Project SIGN actually eventually gave way to Project Grudge, which finally turned into Project Blue Book in 1952, which turned into God knows what, which turned into the organization that saw the spaceship doing all the crazy maneuvers, which turned into Space Force. I added those last few bits. The CIA document ended on Project Blue Book, but we know better. Tip number 2, these are instructions. These are not tips. These are instructions. Number 2, determine the objectives of your investigation. The CIA's concern over UFOs was substantial until the 1950s because of the potential threat to national security from these unidentified flying objects. Most officials did not believe the sightings were extraterrestrial in origin. They were instead concerned the UFOs might be new Soviet weapons. The Project Blue Book team defined 3 main objectives for their investigation. 1, to determine if the UFO phenomenon is a present threat to the security of the U.S. 2, to determine if the UFO phenomena exhibits any technological advances which could be channeled into U.S. research and development at Area 51. I added that. And to explain or identify the stimuli which caused the observer to report the UFO. So in other words, they want to make sure that the guy wasn't tripping on acid. Number 3, consult with I'm skipping a little bit of the fat here, but these are the main points, the how-tos, the whatnots, the what-have-yous, the, you know, what you're supposed to do to get to the bottom of this shit when you're investigating UFO. So number 3 is consult with experts, which, yes, I agree. I totally agree with number 3, consult with experts. Throughout the 50s and 60s, various projects, panels, and other studies were led or sponsored by the U.S. government to research the UFO phenomenon. This includes the CIA-sponsored 1953 Scientific Advisory Panel on Unidentified Flying Objects, also known as the Robertson Panel. You see how many of these things have existed? It's kind of my point. You know, going back to Space Force and tying it all back into this, is there have been so many fucking UFO organizations that have been created, switched, changed, redone, refabricated. And now, you know, we've got the Air Force Space Command Defense Force turned into Teen Space Force 5000. And, you know, the list goes on and on. And now that's where we're at. But going back to this document, Project Blue Book also frequently consulted with outside experts, including astrophysicists, aviation officials, pilots, the Weather Bureau, local weather stations, academics, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, NASA, Kodak for photo analysis in various laboratories. Even the famous astronomer Carl Sagan took part in a panel to review Project Blue Book's findings in the mid-1960s. We talked about that in another podcast, which you can feel free to reference. Carl Sagan did an experiment with UFOs, very, very interesting stuff. So check that out. One thing I did not notice in the experts that they consult with is cops. Now, nothing against cops, but just as a side note, it's always interesting to me when I'm watching like a show about UFO sightings and stuff, that a lot of times, like, they're always looking for someone in authority, right? Any sort of authority figure, because they think that that will make it seem more credible. And I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure if you've watched any of these, you have seen the same thing. They'll say, like, you know, a bright light was spotted maneuvering in strange ways in the sky. Even a police officer said that he had never seen anything like it. As if cops are trained to, like, know what a UFO can or can't do. Like, they have other things that they need to be worrying about when they're training, you know? Today, we're going to learn how to read Miranda rights and properly cuff a suspect and put them in the car without endangering yourself, and how to identify normal maneuvers versus extraterrestrial maneuvers when you see lights in the sky. So that's why Project Blue Book did not consult our fine ladies and gentlemen in uniform. Number five, eliminate false positives. Eliminate each of the known and probable causes of UFO sighting, leaving a small portion of unexplained cases to focus on. By ruling out common explanations, investigations can focus on truly mysterious cases. That I think goes without saying. If you see a bunch of Chinese lanterns in the sky, you can eliminate that from your investigation. Some common explanations for UFO sightings are war hysteria, midsummer madness, celestial events, hoaxes, publicity stunts, and the misinterpretation of known objects. Hoaxes, yes. Celestial events, yes. Mass hysteria, I've never really bought into that one. Publicity stunts, yes. Misinterpretation, yes. Midsummer madness? Isn't that a song by Carla King? That's not what it's called. But she has a song about midsummer stuff. I think she should follow it up with Midsummer Madness, about people seeing UFOs en masse during the mid. I have no. It doesn't. There's no link or anything, because this is just an old CIA document. So we'll have to talk about Midsummer Madness on another episode. Even history can shed some light. An interesting citation found by the 1953 Robinson panel noted that some sightings have been attributed to older phenomenon, the Foo Fighters. Not to be confused with Dave Grohl's Foo Fighters. Foo Fighters that predated the modern concept of UFOs, these were unexplained phenomenon cited by aircraft pilots during World War II in European and Far East theaters of operation, wherein balls of light would fly near the aircraft and maneuver rapidly. They were believed to be electrostatic, similar to St. Elmo's Fire, not to be confused with the John Parr hit of the 80s, St. Elmo's Fire, or electromagnetic phenomenon. But their exact cause or nature was never defined. If the term flying saucers had been popular in 1943, these objects would have been so labeled. The Foo Fighters. That's an episode unto itself. Note to self. Foo Fighters episode, which will also include music by the Foo Fighters, or not. Number six, develop methodology to identify common aircraft and other aerial phenomenon often mistaken for UFOs, because of the significant likelihood of a common or secret military aircraft could be mistaken for a UFO. It's important to know the characteristics of different types of aircrafts and aerial phenomenon to investigate against each sighting. To help investigators go through the troves of report coming in, Project Blue Book developed a methodology to determine if the UFO sighting could likely be attributable to a known aircraft, aerial phenomenon, and they wrote detailed descriptions characterizing each type of aircraft or astronomical phenomenon, including how it might be mistaken for a UFO. Nothing about the Midsummer Madness in there, though. There's no fucking description of that. So what are we supposed to do with that? How do we know? If we eliminate every single one of the Project Blue Book methods and every single characterization of a known flying object or a secret military aircraft, we still don't know what Midsummer Madness is. Number seven, examine witness documentation. Any photographs, videos, audio recordings can be immensely helpful. Clearly, obviously. A famous case that was examined by the Robertson panel was the Trenton, Utah sighting of 1952, where a couple and their two children traveling cross-country on State Highway 30 outside of Tremonton saw what appeared to be 10 to 12 bright shining objects moving westward in the sky in a rough formation. The husband was able to capture some of the objects on film. The case was considered significant because of the excellent documentary evidence in the form of Kodachrome motion picture films, about 1,600 frames. The panel examined the film, case history, and received a briefing from representatives of the USN Photo Interpretation Laboratory on their analysis of the film. They didn't fuck around, the Project Blue Book and the CIA and everything. We tend to sort of act like they just, whatever, you know, the UFOs, they were all balloons. But clearly they were really looking, you know, back in these days. Anyway, so back to the document, says the laboratory believed the objects were not birds, balloons, aircrafts, or reflections, or Midsummer Madness. Doesn't say that. And therefore had to be self-luminous. The panel disagreed with the assessment that the objects were self-luminous, believing that if a controlled experiment was conducted, a terrestrial explanation for the sighting would be confirmed. Which leads us to number eight, which is conduct controlled experiments. As suggested by the Robertson panel, the Utah sighting mentioned in tip 10, so I guess they are tips, not instructions, controlled experiments might be required to try and replicate the unknown phenomena. In the Tremonton case, the panel suggested an experiment where scientists would photograph pillow balloons at different distances under similar weather conditions at the site. They believe that such an experiment could help dispel the self-luminous theory about the objects in the film. Unfortunately, in this case, the cost of conducting such an experiment made the idea unfeasible. Interesting. Not enough money. So these guys saw 10 to 12 self-luminous objects flying westward in the night. Bunch of people got together, some photo. This guy took images of it. They looked at that. They said, Jesus Christ, you know, there was no Photoshop back then. They got all these brains together, all these Poindexters who know a lot about film. And they were going to do a test so they could disprove it, but they didn't have any money. No money. Number nine, gather and test physical and forensic evidence when you can't afford to do a proper experiment. This one is pretty self-explanatory. So I'm just going to go ahead and skip through looking at using Geiger counters to look for radiation and, you know, looking for evidence on the ground of fallen objects or fallen debris that could be identified as earthly. And number 10 is discourage false reporting, of course. The Robertson panel found that the Air Force had instituted a fine channel for receiving reports of nearly anything anyone sees in the sky and fails to understand. This is a classic example of needing to separate the signal from the noise. If you have too many false or junk reports, it becomes increasingly difficult to find the good ones worthy of attention, investigation, or worthy of a investigation or attention. The CIA in the early 1950s was concerned that because of the tense Cold War situation and increased Soviet capabilities, the Soviets could use UFO reports to ignite mass panic and hysteria, as well as Midsummer Madness. It doesn't say that. It only mentions Midsummer Madness that one time. No context. Anyway, the Soviets could use UFO reports to ignite mass panic and hysteria. Even worse, the Soviets could use UFO sightings to overload the U.S. air warning system so that it could not distinguish real targets from supposed UFOs. It's pretty good, actually. In order to lessen the amount of false positive reports, the Robertson panel suggested educating the military, researchers, and even the public, and cops. Doesn't say that, but I would include that in the public. So I guess they do have some training. Educate the public on how to identify objects or phenomena commonly mistaken for UFOs. For example, they recommended training enlisted command and research personnel on how to properly recognize unusually illuminated objects, like balloons or aircraft reflections, as well as natural phenomena such as meteors, fireballs, mirages, or night clouds, or Midsummer Madness, obviously. By knowing how to correctly recognize the objects that were commonly mistaken for UFOs, investigators could quickly eliminate false reports and focus on identifying those sightings which remained unexplained. So that's a lot of work. They did a lot of work on that stuff. Developed a nice system. When they finally got a real good one, they couldn't afford to fucking investigate it. And they never explained what Midsummer Madness is. So, but that, ladies and gentlemen, is from your friendly CIA. Now, obviously, the document is rather old. But there is a questionnaire that you should use when questioning a UFO witness. So this is what you should be looking for. This is actually a copy, scanned copy of a form that a form used that by the CIA, I guess, when they were looking at a UFO investigation. So yeah, you got the date, the location, the type of observation, which was like air visual, ground radar, air intercept radar. There's a couple of choices there. Photos, yes, no, check mark. Length of observation, a brief summary of sighting, and then some, you know, a comment section, obviously. And then conclusion. This is a very short, it's a little tiny card. It's like the size of, you know, probably 4x6 at the most. And then you got your conclusion section, which is possible conclusions. Was balloon, probably balloon, possibly balloon. Those are your first three. Second is, was aircraft, possibly aircraft, probably aircraft. And finally, number three, was astronomical, probably astronomical, possibly astronomical. And then finally, we have the other, which is unidentified. And then finally, insufficient data for evaluation, and then unknown. And then, of course, Midsummer Madness. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this episode of Pop Talk and Aliens. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm in my next, maybe not my next episode, but very soon I'm going to do a long form version of the Roswell story, because I was looking through the episodes I've done over the past, and it was like, it's been over 2 years since I did Roswell, and it was only 30 minutes long. And that story is way too good for 30 minutes. I mean, I basically just did like bullet points. And there's way more to that story. There's a lot of fun that was left out because I was just, you know, rattling off facts. So I'm going to do a longer Roswell story for you. Be very enjoyable, I hope. And no Star Wars for a long time. Maybe no Star Wars ever, because that fucking franchise is burning down to the ground. But enough about that. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that you now understand how to investigate a UFO if that comes up. Until then, cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.